Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey folks, welcome again to another edition of DTNS Labs Interviews. This time, I'm very excited to have Jack Conte, CEO of Patreon, with us. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Tom. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Also, thank you for getting annoyed at video monetization and starting Patreon all those years ago.
You're so welcome. I'll thank myself, too. what a sucky problem.
It seems to have worked out well for both of us, frankly. But for people who don't know, and I've heard you tell this story a bunch of times, but try to come up with your latest version. How did you get the idea for Patreon? Why did you start it?
Yeah, it was really I'll tell the quick version, which is at the beginning of 2013, I started working on a absolutely crazy music video that involved a 3D printed hexapod robot and a fully animatronic head that was singing lyrics to this dubstep remix that I was working on, or actually not a remix, an original song. And I built a replica of the Millennium Falcon cockpit in my studio. I went totally wild on this video. I really went for it. And I spent over $10,000 making it. It was like the best thing I'd ever made in my life. And when I put it out, it got a million views, and I made a behind the scenes video that got about 150,000 views. And my fans, knew how much work I'd put into it. I maxed out 2 credit cards, spent over $10,000 on it, spent 3 months of my life working on this. It got a great response from my community, and my rev share paycheck from that video was, about $150.
And so it didn't cover your time, much less expenses.
Yeah, didn't quite cover my time or expenses, or even really get to 1/100th of the way there. And that was just, it's kind of funny actually when you tell it as a story and everything, and there's this, it seems like such a clear discrepancy between, the value of a thing and then the dollars you get paid for it. But honestly, it's like entirely demoralizing. And as a creative person, to put that much work into something and then to like actually feel like you're making impact, and then to see the check come in for such a low amount, and to know that that's happening systemically across the entire internet, across the entire world, to every creative person on the planet, it's like it made my stomach curl up. And and that's when I really started thinking about, like, God, we gotta fix this.
And so Patreon came about in order to fix that, right? Your idea was, let's just ask people if they will give the money directly.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first version of the product, and the reason that it came out in the first place was exactly that. Like, hey, there is a big discrepancy between between the impact that creative people have on the world and then the dollars they get paid at the end of the month for that impact. And the first version of the product was literally just solving that problem.
So how has it changed since then? I mean, because at first, I know your idea being a musician was sort of the idea of like, oh, you be a patron, I'll make a song, you pay me for that song, I'll make CDs, etc. And then podcasters like me came along, and artists creating artwork came along, and all these people started using it for ways that maybe you had kind of had a notion for, but maybe were entirely unanticipated.
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of there are two big things that that are leading to changes. And the first is, you know, folks like you came along and started using the product, and you know, yes, you're a creator, but you're building a media company. You know, you're hiring people and a co-host, and it feels bigger. And we realized, oh my gosh, creators need CRM, they need CMS, they need you know, help with tax prep, like all the things that you would need to run a small business media company, which, by the way, didn't exist really 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But all the things that a small business needs to operate, well, guess what? Creators need that too. Like, they're running real legitimate operations that are building value for the world and like giving people a lot of joy. And not only do they deserve to be paid for that, they have to be able to run those things, you know, in a viable, sustainable way with the proper tooling and the proper connection to society. And so, you know, we've really started focusing on helping creators build out small business media companies. That's sort of the first thing. And then the second thing that we kind of realized is, oh my gosh, this choice of ours to make a product that serves all creators, as opposed to like, oh, we're helping musicians, or we're helping podcasters, or we're helping YouTubers. Like, Patreon was one of the first companies that said, no, the people that we're helping are creators. It was an opinion that we had about the type of people that Patreon is for. And then we realized, oh my gosh, no one else is building products for these people. No one else is building products for creators. And creators, basically the result of that is are an underserved population. You know, it's hard for creators to get loans. It's hard for creators to interface with financial systems. It's hard for creators to get health insurance. It's hard for creators to save for retirement and, you know, all those things. And so the long-term vision of the company is to really be a product for creators and to help keep building them, you know, products and solutions and services, much like, you know, a SaaS company would build products and services and solutions for, you know, their audience.
I know that's going to strike some people as very far from that first story. Like, you're throwing around words like CRM and SaaS, which all makes sense from someone like me who's doing the business. But what about people who are like, hey, man, I thought this was about the community. I thought this was about the connection between the artist and the people who enjoy their art.
That's precisely what all those things on the back end are for. They're literally just to enable the community. And they're just, at the end of the day, it's the tooling that a creator needs in order to have a stronger connection with their community. So the result of CRM is, guess what? Tighter community with your patrons and a better understanding of who your patrons are and why and what they need and what they want and what they like doing with you and the kinds of things that they enjoy and the kinds of things that they don't. So all those things are tools to help creators build like vibrant, excited, engaged communities.
So that sort of got you in trouble in December, as anybody in our audience knows at DTNS, with what has been dubbed the fiasco, where you were trying to solve a problem for creators because you're creator focused and accidentally created a problem not only just for a few other creators, but also for the community that supports them. So I know you've learned a ton from that. How are you moving forward on that respect, not specifically on the fee aspect of it, but on wrapping your brain around how to balance being creator focused in a way that also helps creators help their community?
Totally. I'll just start by saying that product rollout was like the worst product rollout in Patreon's history.
I'm sure.
Like that was, I mean, to call it a fiasco is the understatement of the year. It was a disaster, and we really messed it up. And I'm never gonna let that happen again. And some of the lessons were, gosh, we've got to do way more qualitative research with both creators and patrons when it comes to anything surrounding payments. Part of our error was that we inserted ourselves between a creator and their audience. And that is a total no-no. Honestly, for me, it's the thing that has pissed me off about big tech companies. And here's this company that you know, that I've been part of since the beginning and co-founded, and boom, I found myself doing that. And it was such a horrible, you know, moment for me, just personally looking in the mirror and going like, God, how could I let this happen? So one way that we're correcting that is we're doing way more qualitative research between creators and patrons. We're always making sure that we're talking with people, not just running A/B tests. Like at the end of the day, people are people, not robots, and we have to talk with folks and hear folks' opinions. The other big thing we're doing is you know, giving creators way more lead time. And it turns out, you know, there's a whole org that helps with this, is product marketing, which is interfacing with the community, interfacing with creators, rolling out messaging months ahead of time, getting folks' feedback. That's a second big thing. And then a third big thing is just inviting creators and patrons into our home. So, you know, we're holding these creator roundtables. We did Patreon on tour, starting a creator advisory board. And that's just moments where Patreon opens up the curtain with our creators. And we show folks, you know, here's what's going on. Here's how we're thinking about things. Here's the big strategic decisions coming up. And we get everyone's take on it. That stuff has helped so much. In addition, we hired a head of product who co-founded a company called Beatport back in the day and is just a wonderful, like, customer obsessed product leader. And I really think he's driving a huge change at Patreon. So, you know, we've done a bunch of things, and I feel the change internally, and we can never let that happen again.
It's a really difficult problem for not just your company, but all companies, all organizations, myself included, to navigate, where we've gone from, I don't know, when I was growing up in the 80s, a company did something, maybe you complained about it to your friends, and that was it, right? Every once in a while, somebody might get a letter to the editor published or a ride into the head of a company angry. But today, everything happens in real time, and there's this disconnect that I saw particularly in the fiasco, but not for the first time, which was you telling people we're going to do something and people saying, why didn't you tell us? And it was like, but that's what they're doing. They are telling you. And it's a disconnect where people want to be told in a particular way that gives them a chance to feel like they've been heard. And it sounds like that's the kind of thing you're trying to negotiate now.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's no one's fault but our own. Like it's not creators being unreasonable. We messed up. I hear you on like people saying, you know, like, hey, why didn't you tell us? And us saying, well, we are telling you.
Yeah.
but more lead time, like especially for things regarding payments, like these are people's businesses that we're talking about. Like this is your business, Tom. You know, for thousands and thousands of creators, this is their monthly paycheck. This is their livelihood. Anything that affects that, we've got to give folks lead time on. Like we're talking about people building hiring plans for the year and scaling their companies using Patreon's technology and payment systems. That is a mega responsibility, and we have to be respectful of the fact that like subtle tweaks and small changes can really affect a creator's livelihood and their community's happiness. And that's precisely like where we messed up and what we need to do better on next time.
Because I've run into the same things where I change a logo. And all of a sudden, everyone is like, hold on, why did you change your logo? I don't like that logo. I know you guys have had a similar situation as well. And recently, I wanted to change the name of the version that has the pre and post show of DTNS that goes on the Patreon feed. Mm. And knowing what I know from years of experience and making mistakes, I slowly just started to ask people, what do you think? Give me ideas. Making sure that people got introduced to the idea of making a change before announcing a change or even deciding what it was going to be named for multiple reasons. One is getting those good ideas that you wouldn't have thought of, but also getting people used to the idea like, hey, we are going to change something. Let's all get comfortable with that. And that's something, I mean, companies didn't used to have to do it all. Right? It's a huge difference in being more connected. It's not that people weren't angry. It's that they didn't have anywhere to express their anger or their discomfort or their criticism or their good ideas. There just wasn't this continuous, constant ability to access each other and talk to each other. And frankly, I think that goes beyond just our particular instances, but that's one of the things we're seeing play out in the whole world right now, politically and otherwise.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, you know, two points on that. First, you know, the idea of change management is becoming increasingly important for companies, especially, you know, web companies are built on continuous deployment and making changes all the time. And so building systems internally to make sure that, you know, to distinguish between small changes and big changes and changes that are going to make people mad and changes that people won't care about, like, turns out that's actually really hard. But you need to have systems in place that identify those types of changes and proactively push them to the public to get opinions back and to make sure that people feel taken care of and heard and that we're not pulling the rug out from from anyone. So change management is like increasingly important. And even internally, you know, giving people previews of decisions and letting people know that, hey, there's a contentious decision coming up and we think everybody's going to be split on it. Half people are going to be, you know, really excited and are begging for this, and the other half of people are going to be kind of bummed about it. And that decision is coming up and we have to make it. So if you have opinions about it, you know, let us know. Even like moments like that where you get an opportunity to see how the community responds to things can help. And then finally, I think, you know, the idea that the thing that stings the most about it is I think a lot of people, the first, especially on social media and Twitter and Facebook, the first sort of assumption is malice.
Yeah.
When in fact, you know, there's just system. And again, I take full, I'm not trying to say that I don't take responsibility for this. At the end of the day, I'm the CEO. The buck stops with me. This is completely my fault. And I take full responsibility for that. And like, I also know internally that, you know, this wasn't like anyone wanted to hurt anyone else. It was it's a combination of systems and not identifying information properly and not proactively pushing it properly.
That idea of change management is something I don't think people hear discussed very often, because like you say, there are small changes that companies make all the time that nobody notices or cares about or even likes because they just make something easier. Identifying what those changes are going to be ahead of time is way harder than you think, everyone. anyone who's had to do it knows this. Like, there are changes that I have made where I make the gamble. I'm like, you know what? I think if I ask, they're going to say they don't want this. But if I just do it, they won't notice and it will work. And it's a risk. And that kind of assessment is a skill. It's a new skill.
Yeah, it's a huge skill. And then, you know, think about scaling that skill rapidly to hundreds of
people
and building systems to automatically identify those changes. That's ultimately that's Patreon's job, right? We have to do that. We have to get better at that, and we will.
Yeah. But every company's job. I mean, Google has to do it at 100,000 times what most companies do. Like that is a common thing, right?
Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about who you think Patreon is for, and who do you think it's not for? Or is there anybody? I guess it's not for somebody who doesn't want to make money. or maybe I'm wrong there. Like, what do you think?
Who Patreon is for from the creator perspective and the patron perspective is pretty clear for me. And I'll caveat this with saying like this is one of those contentious things, but I'm happy to explain the logic here. So Patreon is for creators with established followings who post regularly online. That's who Patreon is for on the creator side. And on the fan side, it's for their most devoted, most excited fans. It's for the fans who want to put their money where their mouth is. It's for their fans whose lives have been affected so much by that creator that they want to be a part of that creator's financial sustainability. So the reason, the contentious part is the established followings part. You know, when I say Patreon is for creators with established followings who post regularly online, the first reply is like, well, do you not care about like small creators? Like, what about creators who don't have an audience yet? Like, are you telling me that you literally don't care about those people? And my answer to that is, look, it's not that we don't care. It's just that that's a completely different problem. Helping a creator like make money and helping a popular creator make money versus helping a budding creator get discovered are two completely different problems with two completely different products and two completely different solution sets. And furthermore, there are a lot of companies that are helping creators get discovered, from YouTube to SoundCloud to Facebook and Twitter. Discovery platforms are really important. But if Patreon tried to fight the discovery battle, if we try to be a better video site than YouTube, if we try to be, a better conversation site than Facebook, I mean, we're going to lose that battle. That's not a war we can win. The problem that we can solve, that we can be really focused on, is, for creators who do have followings, how do we help them build sustainable income? And that's where we've chosen to focus. And again, that's one of those contentious decisions, but it's an important one, and I think it's been the reason that why Patreon has been able to help creators get paid as much as we have, is because we've been hyper focused on that one clear problem.
Yeah, I think it's smart not to try to be all things for any company. And it sounds like what you're saying is there, you could start a Patreon with a small or zero audience, but you won't take a best advantage of what Patreon's good at, because Patreon is good at monetizing that audience, about at helping that audience contribute to your art or your product. And it isn't good at building the audience. So you need to use something else to get to that point where you can take best advantage of this particular tool.
Exactly. Yeah. And the way you said it is exactly right. Like, Patreon is not a product for audience building. We're not good at that. It's not our specialty. It's not our core competency. We don't have products that solve that problem. But in terms of the monetization angle, Patreon is the best in the world. And for us to focus on that is so important. Otherwise we're going to get spread so thin that we aren't good at helping creators make money, which is our mission and our reason for existing in the first place.
It's not that you don't care. I mean, you can invite me over to your house and I care about you, but I'm going to be much better at helping you record a podcast than cleaning your bathtub. I'm just being honest. I'm not good at all things, and it's not because I don't care.
Come on, Tom. Will you please clean my bathtub?
I mean, I'll try. I'll give it a shot. You're going to be disappointed. That's all I'm saying. Before we wrap up here, I think one of the toughest things that you have to deal with as a company focused on a creator dealing with their community is that line between a creator taking advantage of the system appropriately and inappropriately. There's always going to be the people who take advantage of the system. And there's always going to be the people that everyone else agrees, yeah, that's fraud, that's spam, get them off, kick them off. What do you do about the lines, particularly where you have strong communities who say, well, hold on, you're saying they broke the rule, but we don't think they did?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, trust and safety, which is the team that is responsible for building and executing on content policy, is one of the most contentious, divisive topics, I think, on, you know, in you know, community driven software products today. It just is. The way we deal with it is we hire really incredible, experienced people. We invest proactively in resourcing that team and making sure that team has the dollars and the people that they need to ensure that humans are making decisions instead of AI mm-hmm. making decisions. The other thing to realize is, because Patreon is sending people money, not only does that mean that we have a greater responsibility to avoid false positives and making a bad decision, right? We do not want to make a bad decision. I'm not saying we'll be right 100% of the time. And because of that, we have an appeals process. If you email Trust and Safety at Patreon, you can talk to a human. You know, a lot of platforms, if there's a content policy decision that you're unhappy about, you can't talk to a human being. But if you're a creator and you feel like something's been wrong and you've been misidentified, you can talk to a human being at Patreon, and they'll walk you through the whole process, and you can submit, you know, evidence, and you can go through a full appeal process. So those are some of the key things, but at the end of the day, you know, it comes down to really thorough, fair content policy that isn't identity based. It's not, okay, whether you're this type of person or that type of person, or whether you're a Democrat or whether you're a Republican. That would be terrible content policy. Instead, it's behavioral based. What did you do? Do we have a screenshot of the tweet where you said the thing? Did you threaten a person? Did you fire a gun at another human? Are you selling weapons on your Patreon page? Like, there's some very clear behavioral things that allow you to write very clear content policy and make most of the time very clear-cut decisions. Not to say that some of them aren't going to be contentious, because creators are wonderful at building audiences. That's their strong suit. And so, of course, an audience is going to be upset about that. But at the end of the day, you know, we have to make sure that that we're not sending people money who are, you know, going to kill someone or hurt someone or derail a train or do something, you know, awful. And that's a tough line.
All right. Let's finish on an up note. I'd love to just talk to you in general about the internet sometime and where it's going and hopes and dreams and all of that. But if you could leave us with your hope for Patreon, what is the hope for the positive that Patreon can do?
Yeah. So here's my hope for Patreon. I think Patreon is going to be a lens that we look through. That will constantly look at the world through the eyes of a creator and find problems for creators and solve those problems. I think that's going to do a bunch of important things. One, it's going to put pressure on other tech companies to be very creator focused so that all their creators don't jump ship and come to Patreon. And that means that we're going to see lots of other tech companies start to solve problems for creators. We're already seeing that. YouTube has built a clone of Patreon. Facebook is building a clone of Patreon. Like, these are awesome things. We're Patreon's presence alone and the amount of money, you know, last year we sent creators over $150 million. Other tech companies are seeing this and they're starting to build for creators. That in and of itself is an awesome outcome. And then I think beyond that, you know, my hope for Patreon and the internet, besides just being that lens that's constantly solving problems for creators, is that, you know, I hope that we can help weave creators into the fabric of society instead of treating them as you know, as outcasts and pariahs sort of at the edge of society and not being integrated in society and not being able to get a loan from a bank and not being able to save for retirement, that we can actually view creators as financially sustainable, viable businesses that have a place in the modern economy, that are respected and viewed on a pedestal by society. And what I think, you know, down the road, that's going to create is kids graduating high school and college. You know, they're going to look at being a creator as an option. It's going to be, I could be a doctor, I could be a lawyer, I could be a podcaster, I could be a YouTuber. Like, it will just be another thing that you can do that your parents will be proud of and that your friends will respect and that society holistically views as a legitimate career path.
Well, I would like that too. So that sounds really good to me. Folks, if you want to find out more about Patreon and you somehow or are subscribing to this show and don't know, go to patreon.com. Is there anything else you want to tell folks about before we finish up here?
No, I mean, I think that's everything, Tom.
You can also add /DTNS to the end of that patreon.com, and then you can support us directly on Patreon, and you'll get these episodes early. If you're a patron, you're already getting this episode the same day that I recorded it with Jack. Otherwise, it goes into the feed a little bit later. So you can check that out at patreon.com/DTNS. Thanks for supporting us. Make it not possible for us to do these kinds of extra shows and DTNS labs and experimental things and interviews. And we'll talk to you next time.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.